Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones.
Welcome, dear one, to the Emily Alexina podcast. I'm Emily, and I'm interested in finding and nourishing our highest human potential. I believe humans have much more beauty and goodness to share with each other and with nature, much more than we have expressed in recent centuries, although we have seen glimpses of it. I'm excited about our future. On this podcast, you will hear mine and other stories on themes like motherhood, birth, holistic healing, spiritual healing, education, and farming. Support my work by rating, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. Also consider making a financial donation via the link in the show notes. I'm currently saving for new microphones. Music is by Kate Sutherland.
Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Today I have something a little bit different. This is a YouTube video that I recorded for my YouTube channel where I have been reviewing some books, and I decided to take this book review and put it on the podcast and see if some of the podcast listeners could find it interesting. Can also be nice for those who enjoy the content to be able to access it in podcast form. It's kind of easier for listening on the road and things like that. But just so you know, this is originally a video. I don't think any of the content will be too like bothered by the fact that there's no video. And yeah, if you like it, let me know and post some comments on the YouTube channel or send me messages on the different platforms. I love talking about these different topics. This is a little bit different than birth and motherhood and homeschooling, but I'm very interested in reading, as you will kind of, and studying kind of old texts and all these kind of different things. So I hope you enjoy. Hello everyone, Emily Alexina back here today. Today I'm going to be focusing on the Gospel of Judas, which was a surprising find for me. But before we get into that, let me just give you a little bit of a quick update and talk about what I'm reading now, the book reviews to come, and so that you can tell me what you're interested in hearing about next. I sometimes feel like, especially as I start to build this channel and there's like a smaller following, that I'm like the guy in the movie, All the Light We Cannot See. All right, it's a book actually, and the mini series recently came out on Netflix. It was very good. I highly recommend it, especially if you loved the book. And basically there's a professor in that story who is like speaking out on the radio, and he just talks every day at a certain hour on this radio channel, basically before the Second World War, and these children are listening to him. And in those days, of course, when you're speaking out on a radio, you don't know who's listening to you. Like, they didn't have views or counts or, you know, comments that people could easily put. But he was just speaking out for the sake of what he needed to get off his chest and to maybe help, you know, maybe even one person listening. And so that's kind of my goal here with what I'm doing, with speaking about some of these books, sharing about some of my perspectives and insights and different things in my life. I'm not sure how many people are listening, how many it's helping. I have had some beautiful reviews and feedback from some of you, which I truly, truly deeply appreciate. As you can tell, maybe with some of the books around me and those who know me, I'm a reader. I love to read. I maybe don't sleep enough because I love to read. I have been that way since I was a child, and I think it's an innate thing. There was one year where I made a rule where I was not allowed to buy any new books. I did buy one book that year on shamanism, And the other books I read, I think, were borrowed from the library or given to me by friends. I tried to like stall how much reading I did. And that was maybe 6, 7 years ago. And now I've just let myself read as I want to read, read as I want to read. So what am I reading currently? I'm diving into the Bhagavad Gita a little bit. And this book, The Complete Life of Krishna, which is very beautiful and interesting. And there is actually a piece just in the introduction where in the old sacred Indian text, there is mention of like some kind of a spacecraft where there's a battle and Krishna's opponent was given a craft by the sun gods. And this craft could like appear and disappear in the air. It was gigantic, like the size of a city. And it had these really interesting weaponry that it could use. And even the author says that this is likely an extraterrestrial kind of craft and that it wasn't the sun god, but kind of an extraterrestrial being that the enemy was working with. And anyway, if that's interesting to you, because it is interesting to me, I've read into some of the extraterrestrial material by Dolores Cannon, and it's not like super interest of mine. What I actually find most interesting is the synchronicities of different authors around the world in different cultures who seemingly don't know each other and who are writing the same thing. That I find interesting. And so as much as like extraterrestrials don't particularly interest me, I think that some of my work calls for me to be informed about it. And anyway, I found that interesting. So I will be reviewing the Krishna book at some point. I'm just slowly getting through that. What I'm also reading is the lost books of the Bible. This came from the library. And I was hoping this one would be kind of like the Judas book, but it's really kind of written like just as is in like old scriptural text. And I guess these scriptures are not, anyway, I'm going to talk about the Judas book. They are more complete than the Judas book. And there have been like copies of these texts for many years. For example, the first one it starts with is like the Gospel of Mary, and it talks about the life of Mary. And ooh, I'm finding this one a little bit more tricky to read, but we'll try to get through it and let you know what I think of it. I'm also reading right now this medical Qigong therapy. A friend of mine, Desley, who was actually on the podcast or YouTube channel talking about her birth story. She's an herbalist and kind of like women's womb healer. She calls herself the Womb Witch on Instagram. And she lent me this book because she's been talking about medical Qigong for a while. And so I have been diving into Qigong the past 10 days, really, off of videos on YouTube. And I've been feeling like really, really good. It's an incredible modality that is, it's like energetic science and emotional science and spiritual science kind of all built into movement. And it really does improve like sensitivity to energy and also harmonizes the whole energetic systems of the body. I'm feeling fabulous from it. And so this is volume 1 of 5, energetic anatomy and physiology. It's actually more interesting than I thought it was going to be. And maybe when I'm done it, if you guys are interested, I can do a little review and a summary of this book and comparing it to other books, kind of like Hands of Light by Barbara Brennan. What else do I have here? Oh, yes, I have the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which is kind of a more famous one. I'm going to be talking about it in this video as I compare it to the Gospel of Judas. There's another book that I highly recommend by Cynthia Bourgeois about Mary Magdalene. And what I want to do is combine, I think, this book and that book by Cynthia Bourgeois into one book review video. And then also talk about all the other kind of books that I've read about Mary Magdalene that are more channeled books through methods like QHHT, where people have accessed past lives where they have encountered Mary Magdalene. Like, very, very beautiful books. And the synchronicities between all these stories are very interesting. There are definitely some themes that always keep coming up. Some differences as well, which I want to talk about. So this one and the Cynthia Bourgeau book are more based on scriptures, either things that are actually in the Bible or books that, or scriptures that have been found and discovered, like old parchments that have been discovered in Egypt and Israel and things like that. Finally, I have Dolores Cannon, Horns of the Goddess. I listened to this one on Audible in the summer and loved it. It's a great book. These are actually sessions that pertain to kind of the old pagan cultures of Europe. And so it's basically people accessing past lives of people who have lived in these times. And I have a lot of thoughts on this book. I have a lot to share about it because I think that taking these sessions at face value, the way that Dolores Cannon presents them, she basically just puts the transcript of the session and puts it into a book. And Dolores Cannon herself was a bit worried about presenting this book while she was alive because she was worried about how it was going to be taken because of what people think about like witchcraft and paganism. And there are some things here about the Inquisition and some of the terrible things that the church did to people back in those days. So that would have started, I think, around 1100 to like 1800 is how long the witch burnings and witch trials and Inquisition and witch hunts happened. So that was like 600 years of wiping out a certain culture in the West, in the white European world. And of course they did that everywhere else that they colonized. And I don't think it's all evil or all bad. I want to talk about all of that. But yes, big part of it. And so the way that Dolores presents this book is kind of at face value, this was a session, this is what they said, and there's not much commentary or backstory or actual history information. It is because her daughters ended up putting it together and putting it out. And I think that there's a lot to be added to this one. A friend and I are even going back and forth because she was saying, I want to recommend it to people, but I think that they're going to have a bad vision of it. And I have a lot to add about that one, and that will be coming soon. So if you kind of want to help me choose which book to talk about or review next, let me know in the comment section. Okay, one more. Initiation by Elizabeth Heitch. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. She's Hungarian. This book, look at the cover, so gorgeous. This book was a client of mine, a QHHT client of mine, who had it in her library, and I went to her home and I saw another book, which was by Hildegard von Bingen. It was like a translation of her poems, which I got very excited about, and she said, you can borrow that and you should also look into this book, Initiation. And I have like highlighted, quite a few like areas in the book to read and reread. So as someone who is a reader, I am trying to make sure that when I read, I actually retain the information. I don't want to just read and have things like fly away afterwards, especially on some of these books that when I'm reading them have such a strong impact on me. For example, The Celestine Prophecy was one of the books I read maybe 10 plus years ago. And I remember being so in awe of this book and it really shifting things for me. And then there were people in my life who had read it, like older than me, who had read it when it first came out in I think the 90s. And I said, wow, like, you know, and I could tell that they were living their life in a way that they had forgotten the teachings in the books, because the Celestine Prophecy is kind of, it's very much geared to helping, encouraging people to follow their intuition. And yeah, I could tell that that parts of it had been forgotten. And I realized in that moment, oh my gosh, I don't want to read these books that have such an impact on me and then not apply their teachings and wisdom into my life. If there's a book that like lifts my soul and spirit and fills my heart while I'm reading it and shifts my behaviors in the period that I'm reading it, I want that to stick. I want that to stick. And that is actually a big reason that I do these book review videos, is partly for me that I can review the book and share the parts that are most important. And then I get to hold the wisdom and knowledge, you know, on a more, even more deeper level, that it can actually affect change in my thought patterns, my inner life and my outer life. Okay, first time using a microphone. I want to check that it's working. And I think I have time today to read one of my favorite chapters from this book, and that will be the next video. Stay tuned for that. We'll put it right here, or maybe we'll put it here. That's such a beautiful cover. Okay. Now, the Gospel of Judas. So I found this one at my local library. I live in a pretty small town in Canada, and I have always been very interested in the Essenes. I have read mostly up to this point channeled books, where people have access past lives with the Essenes, like books by Dolores Cannon and Joanne Apprentice. There's about four that I loved and recommend. And now a part of me wants to read things that are perhaps more academic, more scientific, more archaeological, and compare the two, because I love reading from different sources and comparing. And so I went to my local library to see what books on the Essenes they had. And I was surprised to find Gospel of Mary Magdalene, these lost books of the Bible, and this Gospel of Judas, which I had never heard about. I have read already a few books on the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and I had never heard about the Gospel of Judas. And here it is in my local library. So I find that interesting because it makes me wonder what kind of people are in my town that have maybe also read this, and maybe the librarians who have chosen for it to be in the library or whoever donated it. I'm very interested actually in learning like the history of this book. Whose hands has it been in my local area? Because I looked in Vaughan, which is a city just outside of Toronto, Vaughan Public Libraries. I did a search on the Essenes and the Gnostic Gospels, and they had maybe like three or four books. They did not have the Book of Mary Magdalene. They didn't have the Book of Judas. They, I think, had the Book of Thomas and Philip, which I will read and borrow from them. And I think they had a movie to watch, but that was it. That was the extent. And that town is maybe like four or five times bigger in size and population. They have seven or eight libraries compared to my little town here. And so I was actually very surprised that that's all they had. And, you know, there could be various reasons for that. I think there could very easily be people who still don't want to have this information and these books available to the public. So that, yes. And why am I borrowing from the library? Well, because like I said, I read a lot, and it is expensive to be buying all of these books kind of out of pocket. But over time, I would love to have my own borrowing library of all these kind of ancient and esoteric and spiritual texts that I can lend out to people physically, maybe even like online somehow, somewhere. I don't know. That's a plan for the future. So this Gospel of Judas is written by Rudolf Kasser, Marvin Mayer, and Gregor Wurst. And Marvin Mayer is Mayer also did this Gospel of Mary Magdalene. So he's one of the main experts on the Gnostic texts and the Essene scrolls. And what's interesting is that the actual Book of Judas is only, let me see if I can find it, how, conclusion. So already this book is not very big, but the extent of the actual like gospel or Book of Judas is this big in the whole book. I don't know if you can see that. Okay, so it's already not really a big book. It's pretty small, which I liked. And the actual Gospel of Judas is just these few pages. It's kind of similar to the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, where you get really excited and you think, oh, there's scripture on Mary Magdalene, and actually a huge part of it is missing, and it's not that big at all. So when it comes to be translated, it's a very, very small amount of text that, I mean, lays a punch, that has a punch to it for sure. But it's not long. So that's why I was disappointed with that other books, the Lost Books of the Bible, where I was like, oh man, now I have to actually read through this kind of ancient weird language. So what I like about this one is that they have the translated version of the Gospel of Judas, and then all this commentary, like these essays and commentaries in the back. And part of the commentary, which I will share now before getting into some of the content of the Gospel of Judas, is about how these parchment papers came into the hands of the academics who translated the scrolls. Because I find this story fascinating. It's kind of like real life Indiana Jones. And basically, if I remember correctly, in the 60s or 70s, these parchment papers would have appeared in the markets in Egypt. So someone would have found them. Like with some of the other Essene scrolls, they were found in a vase, just, you know, in a cave or in the sand somewhere, just these old scrolls just in an old vase somewhere. And so these papers would have come about in some Egyptian markets. And sometimes it's like farmers or like peasant type people who are finding them out in the desert. They don't even really know what they find. They don't really care. They just bring it to the market and just want to make enough money to feed their family. And then someone else picks them up who realizes the treasure that it is, and they want to get a good price for it. And so that's kind of what happened, is it ended up in the hands of this one Egyptian man who wanted to get a good price for it. And I think in the 90s or even the 80s, some academics got to see what it was and kind of got their hands on it and saw that it was of high, high value, because I think the man only showed them like one page with the name of Judas on it. So that's what this is on the back, basically, is like the name of Judas in the language that it's written. And I'm sorry, I do forget what language it's written in. There's a few different of those old languages. And the academics got really excited. They wanted to buy it, and the cost was too great, and they couldn't purchase it. Basically, they couldn't get the funds together, and so the pages kind of disappeared, and the deal went through. And so then they ended up being sold to some American in New York who got the parchment papers, and this was some private guy who wanted his hands on this these old scriptures. And they were stored in like some kind of storage place that was very humid and affected the parchment papers. And then he decided to try to preserve them even better, to freeze them. And then the humidity from the paper like froze and basically broke even more of the pages, which is crazy to think about. And then from that man, there's a woman in Switzerland who is part of this foundation of like gathering historical artifacts for the public. And she was able finally to get a large sum of money together to buy the scrolls and give them to the academics for translation and study, and then for them to be presented in a museum where they could be accessed by the public. I love all that story. I've never thought about archaeology or like these kind of treasures in that sense, and the private market world. And this kind of, I guess, makes me a little bit intrigued about it. I found that very interesting. So basically, once they got their hands on it, the pages of parchment were like falling apart. Like you really had to be super careful. And they talk about this French woman who got the parchment papers, and she had like fairy hands and tweezers, and put them all between panes of glass so that they could be arranged in chronological, in like the right order. Now, what also happened was that this original Egyptian man who was trying to get a good price for the papers, he folded them. And so that meant that the where the fold was in the paper, and these pages were so old and fragile that in every page, that fold ended up breaking and like disintegrating parts of the paper. So there's like two or three lines, you know, on each end of these halves of pages that have just been broken just from being folded. So, you know, note to self, note to you, if ever you find an old parchment paper anywhere in a cave or whatever, don't fold it, okay? And don't freeze it. So they talk about, yeah, putting these pages back together, that one half of the pages had page numbers on them and the other half did not. And so they had to try to figure out what went with what. And, you know, they might still be wrong. In terms of the author of these parchments, I don't think it's signed, but they do say that they think it's a copy. So this is something I also find interesting about like thinking about the past and these old scriptures, was that it was human beings who were sitting there copying out the scripts, the ancient important texts. And they often had, you know, like multiple copies that were out and about, traveling around the world and then being copied and being copied. So I find that interesting because I wouldn't have thought of like a distribution of written word in those times. Like we're talking, you know, 100 or 200 years AD, but they existed, you know. Maybe like my sense of history is not that great. I apologize. In Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, which is one of my favorite Essene books, that is a channeled work, she talks about how Grandmother Anna, who would have been Jesus's grandmother, was writing out the scripts and texts. Like she was copying and sometimes writing her own. I don't know if she wrote her own. Maybe I'm making that up, but at least copying and making sure that there were enough copies and that they were held in safe areas, around, you know, the land of Palestine and in Egypt and maybe even traveling to other parts of the world. So I find all of that fascinating. Okay, let's get into the content. Now, one thing that I find with these books, and it's the same criticism that I have of like the Dolores Cannon book, but maybe it's not a terrible thing, is like, for example, in this book, they don't talk at all about the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, even in the commentary. They don't compare the two, because in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, it's kind of presented that Mary Magdalene was Jesus's favorite disciple, and they even name her the apostle to the apostles. Let me check that I'm still, yes, still recording. But in the Gospel of Judas, it's kind of presented that he's the favorite disciple. And in the commentary, they kind of talk about how Judas is presented in the Bible and even in the church, from my understanding. Okay, like I'm actually not so much steeped in Christian teachings right now. I actually feel because I'm reading all of this Essene stuff, I should probably read the whole Bible and get more acquainted with Christian theology. At the same time, though, I feel like I really don't want to. I grew up going to Catholic school and being exposed to that as a child. And of course, I would understand it differently as an adult. But yeah, I'm a lot more interested in like the Essenes than like modern Christianity, if that makes sense. That's where I'm at personally. So from my understanding, and they talk about it in the book, in modern Christianity, Judas Iscariot is presented as like the evil one. And even in the Bible, in two of the Gospels, it's described what happens to him after Jesus's crucifixion, because basically it's his fault that Jesus got crucified, because he's the one who basically tells the Jews, the Pharisee leaders, where Jesus is, and that begins the whole process of his trial and crucifixion. Okay, if I said anything wrong, please correct me in the comments. I'm totally not an expert in any of this, just a mom and a woman who's very interested. And so basically in one of the Gospels, they say that he is like sent to this land. He's given like this land of death, and God like explodes his intestines and his inner organs like spill out and he dies. And another one, he commits suicide. And it's basically like, he's like, he was the devil. He was controlled by the devil to do this horrible, horrible thing to Jesus. But then there's the point, I guess this has been a debate that has existed already for some time, that, you know, the religion of Christianity is based on the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus, and Jesus dying for people's sins, right? That's the belief. And so without the crucifixion, you have no religion. You almost have no story of Jesus. And Judas is the one who enables this whole story. So is he really the bad guy? And that's kind of the point in this Gospel of Judas. That he was the only one who truly knew Jesus. And so I'm going to read a part here for you that you might find interesting. The earthly ministry of Jesus. When Jesus appeared on earth, he performed miracles and great wonders for the salvation of humanity. And since some walked in the way of righteousness, while others walked in their transgressions, the 12 disciples were called. He began to speak with them about the mysteries beyond the world and what would take place at the end. Often he did not appear to his disciples as himself, but he was found among them as a child. Scene 1, Jesus dialogues with his disciples, the prayer of thanksgiving or the Eucharist. One day he was with his disciples in Judea, and he found them gathered together and seated in pious observance. When he approached his disciples, gathered together and seated, and offering a prayer of thanksgiving over the bread, he laughed. The disciples said to him, "Master, why are you laughing at our prayer of thanksgiving? We have done what is right." He answered and said to them, "I am not laughing at you. You are not doing this because of your own will, but because it is through this that your God will be praised." They said, "Master, you are the Son of our God." Jesus said to them, "How do you know me? Truly, I say to you, no generation of the people that are among you will know me." The disciples become angry. When his disciples heard this, they started getting angry and infuriated and began blaspheming against him in their hearts. When Jesus observed their lack of understanding, he said to them, "Why has this agitation led you to anger? Your God who is within you and ... there's missing words in a lot of these things. have provoked you to anger within your souls. Let any one of you who is strong enough among human beings bring out the perfect human and stand before my face." They all said, "We have the strength." But their spirits did not dare to stand before him, except for Judas Iscariot. He was able to stand before him, but he could not look him in the eyes, and he turned his face away. Judas said to him, "I know who you are and where you have come from. You are from the immortal realm of Barbello, and I am not worthy to utter the name of the one who has sent you." Jesus speaks to Judas privately. Knowing that Judas was reflecting upon something that was exalted, Jesus said to him, "Step away from the others, and I shall tell you the mysteries of the kingdom. It is possible for you to reach it, but you will grieve a great deal. For someone else will replace you, in order that the 12 disciples may again come to completion with their God." Judas says to him, "When will you tell me these things, and when will the great day of light dawn for the generation?" But when he said this, Jesus left him. And there's another part. I will touch upon this Barbello thing. Judas asks about his own fate. Judas said, "Master, could it be that my seed is under the control of the rulers?" Jesus answered and said to him, "Come that I," two lines missing, "but that you will grieve much when you see the kingdom and all its generation." When he heard this, Judas said to him, "What good is it that I have received it? For you have set me apart for that generation." Jesus answered and said, "You will become the 13th, and you will be cursed by the other generations, and you will come to rule over them. In the last days, they will curse your ascent to the holy generation." Jesus said, "Come that I may teach you about secrets no person has ever seen, for there exists a great deal and boundless realm whose extent no generation of angels has seen, in which there is a great invisible spirit, which no eye of an angel has ever seen, no thought of the heart has ever comprehended, and it was never called by any name." And then there's kind of like a theological discourse, which I find a little bit complicated. Rulers and angels, creation of humanity. I mean, you can probably find this text translated online, I bet, just the Gospel of Judas in itself. So the Gospel of Judas ends with this conclusion. Conclusion: Judas betrays Jesus. Their high priests murmured because he had gone into the guest room for his prayer, but some scribes were there watching carefully in order to arrest him during the prayer, for they were afraid of the people, since he was regarded by all as a prophet. They approached Judas and said to him, "What are you doing here? You are Jesus's disciple." Judas answered them as they wished, and he received some money and handed him over to them. And that's where that gospel ends. So there's actually no story, no account of the actual crucifixion of Jesus in the Gospel of Judas. And yes. So some of those things are pretty interesting. What they also talk about in the kind of commentary at the end was that there was this man named Irenaeus, who was a heretic hunter. Now let me try to find the page. And he wrote about this Gospel of Judas. When did this? So this happened. This was like in the 2nd or 3rd century. He was basically like hunting for the Gnostics and some of the Gnostic texts, because they were trying to put together a Bible and scripture that would fit, that would be for the religion, and cut out or burn away or explain away why any other scripture that they decided would not belong into the Bible, basically, why it wouldn't belong there. And so I found this little, there's a little excerpt here. Of course, I wish I could like highlight this book, but it was a library book, so I just folded the pages a little bit. Heresy hunters like Irenaeus found, oh, okay, this is about the Gnostics. I think I wanted to talk about Gnosticism first, because if you don't know about who the Gnostics were, they were basically a group of people who had very different beliefs than what the church was saying. And they're kind of more steeped in like mysticism and esoteric practices. And it's all based on inner knowing and inner connection with God. And basically the church didn't like these people because the church became superfluous for the Gnostics, because they believed, well, it's all about me and my understanding and my self-knowledge and my relationship with God. I don't need an external person to teach me or tell me what to do or tell me how to understand God or how to relate to God, because it's a personal matter. And I mean, they did have teachers within their groups, but it was kind of based on, yeah, this like personal journey. So here's a bit of a definition I thought could be interesting. The term Gnosticism comes from the Greek word gnosis, which means knowledge. Gnostics are those who are in the know. And what is it that they know? They know secrets that can bring salvation. For Gnostics, a person is saved not by having faith in Christ or by doing good works. Rather, a person is saved by knowing the truth about the world we live in, about who the true God is, and especially about who we ourselves are. In other words, this is largely self-knowledge, knowledge of where we come from, how we got here, and how we can return to our heavenly home. According to most Gnostics, this material world is not our home. We are trapped here in these bodies of flesh, and we need to learn how to escape. For those Gnostics who were also Christian, many Gnostics were not, it is Christ himself who brings this knowledge from above. He reveals the truth to his intimate followers, and it is this truth that can set them free. Traditionally, Christianity has taught, of course, that our world is the good creation of the one true God. But this was not the view of the Gnostics. According to a wide range of Gnostic groups, the God who created this world is not the only God, and in fact is not even the most powerful or all-knowing God. He is a much lesser, inferior, and often ignorant deity. How can anyone look at this world and call it good? Gnostics saw the disasters around them, the earthquakes, hurricanes, floods, famines, droughts, epidemics, misery, suffering, and they declared that the world is not good. But they said, you can't pin the blame of this world on God, capital G. No, this world is a cosmic disaster, and salvation comes only to those who learn how to escape this world and its material trappings. So that's very interesting. There's even in one of these essays, they kind of talk about how the God of Genesis is like not the ultimate God. And I find all of that fascinating. I don't believe in exactly like my personal, for the moment, frame of mind is not exactly along these lines. But to me, it brings up some of Dolores Cannon's books, where she talks about, for example, in the Keepers of the Garden or the Custodians, one of those books, where they kind of talk about how extraterrestrial beings or spiritual beings would have been involved in creating the earth and seeding the earth with life, and how they messed up, how like there was an accident, something happened, and it didn't go according to plan, and like disease and stuff came in that was not according to plan. And so sometimes when I read this, I think about how in these old texts, what they're referring to God sometimes gets mixed up with like extraterrestrial beings. And I still do like believe in a God, G-O-D, capital G, source, kind of energy, kind of, you know, like more of the yogic along the lines of yoga, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, like a Brahman from the yogic kind of philosophy, situation. But I find this very interesting. And of course, in the book, Jesus like agrees that he comes from Barbello. He agrees with Judas, and Barbello is this Gnostic, God type figure who's actually like a female energy of creation. And that's also very interesting. Again, I personally don't think the ultimate G, capital G O D God is, female. I think it's non-gendered. But I think that like beyond that, there is a duality of male and female that is equal, which of course is like kind of taken out of Christianity altogether. Okay, so those were the Gnostics were, and then heresy hunters like Irenaeus, this was in the year, I think 300 AD, found Gnostics particularly insidious and difficult to attack. The problem was that you couldn't reason with a Gnostic to show him the error of his ways. He had secret knowledge that you didn't. If you said that he was wrong, he could just shrug it off and point out that you simply didn't know. And so Irenaeus and others like him had to pull out all the stops in their attacks, trying to convince other Christians, at least, that the Gnostics did not have the truth. but had actually perverted the truth by rejecting the God of the Old Testament and his creation, and by denying that Christ really was a flesh and blood human being whose death and resurrection, not his secret teachings, brought salvation. Irenaeus's five-volume refutation of Gnostics maligned their beliefs for being hopelessly contradictory, ridiculously detailed, and contrary to the teachings of Jesus' own apostles. He sometimes referred to some of the Gnostic writings in order to poke fun at them, contrasting them to the sacred scriptures accepted by the church at large. One of the writings he mocked was the Gospel of Judas. And so they had these writings from Irenaeus for many, many years before they actually found parchment papers of the Gospel of Judas. And this became available to the public, I think, only in like the year 2000, 2004 is when they were finally translated and released. But they had known for like hundreds of years that this man Irenaeus had written about and mocked the Gospel of Judas that like basically existed and was out there. So yeah, I find that interesting. Sometimes what they'll do with some of these parchments that I'm learning about, like some of the other Gnostic Gospels, is that they will actually find copies. Like I think the Gospel of Thomas and Philip were found in two or three different locations where they like find this old parchment paper and they're like, oh, this is a copy, we have this already. I find that very interesting. Okay, let me see to kind of finalize. There was maybe one more thing. It was just like very well kind of said. So, okay. We have already noted some of the key theological themes of this gospel. The creator of this world is not the one true God. This world is an evil place to be escaped. Christ is not the son of the creator. Salvation comes not through the death and resurrection of Jesus, but through the revelation of secret knowledge that he provides. And so one of the things that we begin to encounter as we kind of look into some of the Gnostic texts is that they resemble quite a bit yogic scriptures and yogic philosophy and Eastern philosophy. And I find this interesting because if things had been slightly different, if these texts had been included in Christianity from the beginning, like our whole world would be incredibly different, right? Even just think of like how colonialism happened and how the witch hunts happened and how patriarchy took over and women, you know, were like put down to second rank. Like all of these things would have happened in such a different way. Like everything I've seen in the Essene theology and the Gnostic stuff and the channeled books is that what Jesus was always trying to teach was a balance between male and female always. And basically what happened after he died was that some people, like it was already a patriarchal world. Some people didn't like that and sifted through some of the teachings to fit their political agenda, including in the Bible. Although I don't think the Bible is, you know, completely wrong or evil, but I think that it's like subtly manipulated. And the secret knowledge that he provides, to me, this like resembles yoga and esotericism. There was a beautiful quote in one of my other Essene books that said something along the lines of how Christianity is missing its mystical counterpart. Like Judaism has like Kabbalic teachings, that is like its esoteric mysticism. Islam has the same thing with like Sufism, and Christianity doesn't have that because they tried to wipe it out. They saw it as a competition to their teachings and their power, and they sought to wipe it out. And so Christianity was like, in this sense, what one that they say, I think the quote is like, it was doomed from the beginning because they wiped out their like feminine, mysterious, esoteric side from the beginning and did not allow it to have space. And this is kind of like the secret knowledge that is Yeah, this revelation of secret knowledge is like alluding to these kind of more esoteric mystical teachings. These themes stand diametrically opposed to the theological views that eventually triumphed in the early Christian debates concerning proper belief. That is to say, in the theological wars of the second and third centuries, when different Christian groups maintained different systems of belief and doctrine, all of them insisting that their views were not only right, but were the views of Jesus and his closest followers. We have long known about these debates, and the Gospel of Judas allows us to see one side of them even more clearly, one of the sides that ended up losing. Every side laid claim to sacred books supporting its point of view. All insisted that these views came straight from Jesus and through him from God. But only one side won. This was the side that decided which books should be considered scripture and that wrote the Christian creeds that have come down to us today. Embodied in these creeds are theological statements that trumpet the success of the Orthodox party. Consider the opening of one of the most famous of the creeds. We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all things visible and invisible. This affirmation stands in stark contrast with the views set forth in the Gospel of Judas, where there is not just one God, but many gods, and where the creator of this world is not the true God, but an inferior deity who is not the Father of all and is certainly not Almighty. We are now in a position to examine more closely some of the key teachings of this gospel, its views about God, the world, Christ, salvation, and the other apostles who stand behind the creed that came to be accepted as authoritative, yet who never do understand the truth. Pretty potent, pretty, you know, sometimes I'm even a little bit scared to talk about this, to be honest. Like I have some close friends who are believers in the Bible and Christianity. And to be honest, my personal view is I think we can attain salvation through all of these means. In yoga, they talk about there being like thousands of different ways to come to God. There's like the path of knowledge, also the path of devotion. And within all of those paths, you can like, you know, combine them, and there's basically as many paths as there are human beings. My biggest sort of problem or challenge is that from their side, they say, no, this is the one only way, and we are going to, and anyone who doesn't follow this one way is condemned, you know, condemned or working with the devil or committing sin or what have you. And that's where we get into these wars, and that's where we get into fights, and that's where we create enemies, and it feels counterproductive. And of course, I don't know if like this Gospel of Judas is you know, completely right. I don't agree like theologically with some of the things that are in here. Everything, all the words can be interpreted in so many different ways, of course. But it is an important story to tell, and I think I'm going to leave it at that. You know, in the Grandmother of Anna book, they talk about how after Jesus's crucifixion and resurrection, Mother Mary was trying to like fix the stories that were being told about Jesus, and she was trying to talk to Peter, and like in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, they talk about how Peter and Mary didn't get along. And then all of the channeled books that I've seen, you know, that's what comes about. And yeah, it's just interesting to think like what could have truly happened. And then of course, if you start to doubt one thing, then maybe that you doubt everything. But I don't think that means that we need to throw it all out. Of course, of course. Just, you know, what I like to do is as I read through some of this stuff, I try to see like what lands in my heart, kind of coming back to the Celestine prophecy. What makes me glow? What lifts me up? What if it's a belief or if it's something that's true, if I incorporate that and bring it into my mind and into my heart, does it improve my life? Does it improve my character? Does it improve how I'm going to treat other people? Does it improve how I support life and thriving and harmony and peace on this planet? Those are kind of the things I'm looking for. And I guess that's maybe I'm kind of a Gnostic in that sense, where it's like a self-paced thing, and I'm happily going to throw out anything that doesn't feel in alignment with that. But, you know, still learn about it, take it in, hold it, share about it, have these discussions and thoughts about it. So those are my thoughts on the Gospel of Judas. I think I've said everything I wanted to say. If you have anything that you want to add about it, please share it in the comments below. This will be shared on YouTube as a video and also on my podcast, so you can listen to it without video if you like. And I'm going to put this down and jump into a gorgeous chapter from this book right away. So that video will be coming for you soon. Thank you so much for watching or listening. Subscribe, comment, like. I know everyone says this on YouTube and on the podcast, but it's very helpful for our channels and for the people kind of putting out creation into the online world. So with that, I wish you a beautiful day.
Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times.